Suns Week in All. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. This is a big Olympic year, but if we look ahead, there's also excitement for the 2022 FIFA World Cup football tournament in Qatar. This will be the first World Cup held in the Middle East and the Arab Muslim world. Joining us with details on Qatar's World Cup preparations is my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. This week marked 1,000 days until the 2022 World Cup kicks off in Qatar, and World Cup organizers say everything is on schedule. Hassan Al-Thawadi is the Secretary General of Qatar's Supreme Committee for Delivery and Legacy. He says the tournament's infrastructure is rapidly evolving in and around Doha, and two stadiums are already fully operational.
With 1,000 days to go, I'm very proud to say that we're on schedule. In terms of stadiums, we've launched two stadiums, Khalifa Stadium and Al-Janoub Stadium, last year. Qatar Foundation Stadium, or Education City Stadium, is completed. We're just waiting for the right time to launch it. We will have two more stadiums coming online by the end of this year, Al-Rayyan Stadium and Al-Bayt Stadium, and by the end of 2021, early 2022, we'll have all eight stadiums ready, with Lusail being the final one. In terms of overall infrastructure, so if we're looking, for example, at the metro system is operational. New lines are coming into play as we speak. It was successfully tested during the Club World Cup, where there was... The great thing about it was very, very successfully utilized by the population, not just for the tournament, but just generally. In terms of ICT infrastructure, we're practically, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, completed with the 5G coverage over most of the country. So simply put, in terms of tournament infrastructure, everything's coming into play, everything's coming according to schedule, and we've moved on to the operational side of things. So we're actually preparing our operational capabilities and improving our operational capabilities to host the World Cup in 2022.
The rapid progress is no doubt a result of lessons learned from the FIFA Club World Cup that was held in Doha last December and served as a kind of prelude to 2022. The 2019 tournament drew over 50,000 international fans and featured a free festival called the Fan Zone that introduced Western fans to Middle Eastern culture. Al-Thawadi says the Fan Zone also quelled concerns over alcohol availability in a country that has strict restrictions on booze and a low tolerance for excessive partying.
Throughout the years, we've always said that we will have Fan Zones available in certain areas, alcohol will be available, and we delivered on it. The atmosphere was great, the fans had a great time, alcohol was available, affordable alcohol was available. As I said, the atmosphere was absolutely fantastic, and it showcased what we've been promising, what we've been planning, that the model that we're talking about does work. Now the question is, how do we develop it? How do we create new, different locations? How do we improve on it?
And Al-Thawadi says finding answers to those kinds of questions over the past 10 years is finally paying off.
We can only, or at least for me personally, I can only look at it with excitement, trepidation, anxiety, but more importantly also conviction that this will be, without a doubt, the best tournament. The first World Cup in the Middle East, in the Arab world, will set a benchmark in the history of hosting major tournaments.
FIFA has praised the significant progress made in Qatar leading up to 2022. FIFA President Gianni Infantino is quoted as saying, "Qatar stands where no other host did before. Qatar wants to amaze the world and is on track to achieve it." He added the upcoming tournament will be a breakthrough from a social and cultural perspective and will serve as a tool for common understanding. Well, as Qatar continues to prepare to make history in 2022, get ready for the FIFA Club World Cup tournament that is set to return to Doha later this year. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Gwen mentioned the FIFA Club World Cup being staged in Doha later this year. That tournament will be held in December. This week in Doha, there's top-level women's tennis taking place. Former world number one Garbiñe Muguruza of Spain beat Ukrainian teenager Diana Yastremska 6-2 and 6-4 to reach the quarterfinals of the Qatar Open in Doha. Muguruza is a former French Open and Wimbledon champion who lost in this year's Australian Open final to American Sofia Kenin. Muguruza has reached at least the quarterfinals of all five tournaments she has played in 2020. Garbiñe will next face world number one Ash Barty of Australia, who advanced when Russian-born Elena Rybakina had to withdraw with an injury after her second-round win Tuesday. There's also top-level men's tennis taking place in the Middle East this week. Top-ranked Novak Djokovic beat German veteran Philipp Kohlschreiber 6-3 and 6-1 to reach the quarterfinals of the Dubai Championships and remain unbeaten in 2020. The Serbian star Djokovic has won all 15 of his matches this year, including six wins at the ATP Cup, as well as his successful run to the Australian Open title. In African athletics, the first course in what could be a marathon feast will be offered in London on Sunday when Ethiopian star Kenenisa Bekele takes on Kenya's Lawrence Chirono in the Vitality Big Half. It's a spicy warm-up for Kenenisa, who will challenge world record holder Eliud Kipchoge of Kenya in the full marathon in London in April, and then the Olympic marathon in August. But the Ethiopian faces a tough opponent in Lawrence Chirono on Sunday. The energetic Andy Edwards has this preview for us from London.
Anyone who can win titles in Boston and Chicago within a year has to be reckoned with, and that is what Lawrence Chirono achieved in 2019. Those courses are contrasting, the tough, rolling hills of Boston and the fast, flat streets of Chicago. Chirono is a proven competitor, but so, of course, is Kenenisa Bekele. The Ethiopian proved his mental and physical resilience by triumphing in grand style on his comeback from lengthy injury at the Berlin Marathon 5 months ago, to run within just 2 seconds of Eliud Kipchoge's world record of 2:01.39 was astounding. Now they are set to meet in the London Marathon on April 26, and then, the coronavirus permitting, in the Olympic Marathon in Japan in August. Speaking 24 hours after his remarkable performance in Berlin last September, Kenenisa relished the prospect of himself and Eliud Kipchoge on the same start line and at the height of their powers.
I'm very happy if I, you know, run again with Eliud Kipchoge anywhere, soon or whatever. Yeah, you know, I'm ready for that.
Performances at half marathon from an athlete in preparation to give their best in the marathon require careful interpretation. Both Kenenisa and Lawrence Chirono are likely to be deep in their respective preparation. Kenenisa for London and Lawrence for his title defence in Boston in April. That can mean heavy legs and not necessarily their best times ever for half the distance. What we can judge better is their tactical sense, how they react to changes in the race, and a sense of how dominant each man feels in pursuit of their ultimate goal. Often it comes in comments made when such a race as Sunday's half marathon is done and dusted. The athlete is responding to journalists' questions, and you can get a sense of how confident they feel in mind and body. When Sunday is done, the marathon gaze turns to London and Boston. For the latter, Lawrence Chirono should be a strong defending champion. But in London on April 26, when two such titans as Kenenisa Bekele and Eliud Kipchoge meet, it looks at present to be a wide-open race. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Andy Edwards in London.
This is Jonathan McKinstry, the head coach of the Uganda men's national team. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Thanks, coach. Cameroonian football player Christian Basagog has announced he'll donate about $16,000 to Cameroonian students living in areas of China stricken by the deadly coronavirus. The 24-year-old Basagog is based in China with the club Henan Janye, but he's currently in Yaoundé, Cameroon, while football is suspended in China due to coronavirus. Cameroon's embassy in China says there are about 300 Cameroonians, mainly students, living in Hubei province, considered the epicenter of the coronavirus epidemic. Basagog says, and I quote, "China has a special place in my heart, and that's where I ply my trade. It's important that we come together in such periods and show support and love to the needy." Well, let's show some more love for Tyson Fury, who captured the World Boxing Council heavyweight title 5 days ago in Las Vegas, Nevada. In his latest Game Room podcast, my VOA colleague Jim Stevenson had stories on Fury and the Kobe Bryant Memorial in Los Angeles. But Jim begins with the British boxer nicknamed the Gypsy King.
Not bad for an old fat guy who can't punch, eh? Done all right, didn't I?
British boxer Tyson Fury unleashed his fury in Las Vegas to reclaim the heavyweight title in a boisterous rematch with American Deontay Wilder.
It was a grueling fight while it lasted, and he was trying to clean it up in there. He hit me after the bell. I hit him after the bell, like after we said break, we hit each other. I got a point taken off, but it wasn't going to alter the fight.
Fury found a more polished opponent during the long-awaited rematch.
I felt like Deontay's jab had improved, and he did take his time more like he said he did. It's like he said he would. And he was using his jab quite well, actually. I was very impressed with his double jab. And he was heavier. I wasn't able to bully him around as I did last time in close because he was a lot heavier than he ever was. So, yeah. But tonight was my night, and I was never going to let anybody take it from me.
Wilder had gained more than 9 kilograms and claimed an 18-kilo pre-fight costume weakened his legs by the time his corner conceded the fight in the 7th round. Fury came in with a new power style just after 7 weeks with trainer Javon Sugarhill Stewart, overwhelming Wilder as the so-called Gypsy King knocked him down in the 3rd and 5th rounds.
Everybody knows I'm a master slick boxer and I can jab and move around the ring for 12 rounds. But that didn't work last time. I got a draw. Like I said, a draw is a failure to me because all I do is win, win, win. And this time I wanted the knockout, and I think the only way I could guarantee that I was going to get a win was the knockout.
The victory in Las Vegas was a huge comeback for Fury, who left the sport for more than 2 years after battles with addiction and mental illness. He thinks he can fight even better.
I'm my own worst critic. And even though it was a fantastic performance and I got a great win, I know I can do better. And I've only just started me in Sugar Hill with this style. We've had 7 weeks to perfect a style that takes years at the Kronk Gym in and out. But I'm a quick learner and I aim to get back to work straight away, work on my balance, work on my straight punches, and we're going to be putting people to sleep left, right and centre.
Wilder suffered his first ever defeat in 44 fights. Fury, with a 30-0-1 record and 21 knockouts, is ready to take on Wilder again, and anyone else for that matter.
Deontay will need time to recover from the fight, but I'm almost sure that he'll take a rematch because he's a dynamite puncher, and at any time he can take somebody out, and with that danger, then you're always in a fight. So I'm pretty sure we'll do it again. We're running back again if he wants to, but if he doesn't want to, then these are me promoters, and you know, whatever they want to do, I'm happy with. Whoever's next will get the same treatment, that's for sure.
Stand up!
Sports fans have a lot to hear each day on VOA. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports for the latest from Africa, the United States, and around the world.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro.
Find the Sunny Side of Sports on the radio, online, and as a podcast.
This is Sunny Side of Sports
right here on the Voice of America.
I get it.
Monday was a day of remembrance for National Basketball Association great Kobe Bryant and his 13-year-old daughter Gianna, who were among 9 people killed in a helicopter crash in January. Speaking at Times Through Tears, Vanessa Bryant praised her husband's devotion to their family as she addressed thousands of fans gathered at the Staples Center in Los Angeles.
Kobe was the MVP of Girl Dads, or MVD. He never left the toilet seat up. He always told the girls how beautiful and smart they are. He taught them how to be brave and how to keep pushing forward when things get tough. God knew they couldn't be on this earth without each other.
WNBA star Diana Taurasi spoke of how Kobe Bryant's talent was very evident in his daughter.
The same passion we all recognized in Kobe, obviously Gigi inherited. Her skill was undeniable at an early age. I mean, who has a turnaway fadeaway jumper at 11?
The arena was filled with many of the top NBA players, present and past. Perhaps the best of all time, Michael Jordan, recalled the early days of his interactions with Kobe Bryant.
He used to call me, text me, 11:30, 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning. At first, it was an aggravation, but then it turned into a certain passion. This kid had passion like you would never know.
That intense passion for basketball inspired the man who himself inspired millions who love the sport.
What Kobe Bryant was to me was the inspiration that someone truly cared about the way I played the game or the way that he wanted to play the game. He wanted to be the best basketball player that he could be. And as I got to know him, I wanted to be the best big brother that I could be.
Michael Jordan could not hold back his tears as he spoke. Known for his practical jokes, Jordan says Kobe Bryant's final joke on him will be a crying meme.
Now he's got me. I told my wife I wasn't going to do this because I didn't want to see that for the next 3 or 4 years. That is what Kobe Bryant does to me.
Kobe Bryant played his entire 20-year NBA career with the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, images of the 5-time NBA champion are appearing all over Los Angeles. The murals became a place for fans like Deanna Ortega to gather, grieve, and reminisce.
We're here just to, you know, show love for Kobe Bryant and his daughter Gianna, and just wanted to come to LA and just show some love and take a picture of Kobe Bryant's mural right here.
One such mural can be found in the La Brea neighborhood. Created by an LA-based street artist, this mural features newspaper articles highlighting Bryant's career accomplishments and some of his iconic and inspiring quotes. The tribute is also unique as it invites fans like Jolyn and Jason to make their mark on the artwork by writing messages for their fallen hero.
Because he was also a legend for everyone, not only in the game for basketball, but for everyone in their life. He inspired everyone to push themselves to do their best. So in my opinion, I really think that having murals of Kobe Bryant and Gigi is honestly like something everyone would remember.
He was like an icon, you know, like real good basketball player, you know, like family man. Did you see how he is with his kids? And he just always had that positive attitude and he was just idolized. He was one of my favorite basketball players growing up, him and Michael Jordan.
Another mural in Melrose is outside of Shoe Palace, a popular streetwear store. Visitors are encouraged to plaster Post-it notes with messages for the L.A. Lakers star. Ruben Menyane is manager of Shoe Palace.
We started when we heard of the passing. We saw a lot of people started to show up, bring some flowers and some memorabilia, and wanting to put notes. So I took out some notepads, started writing a few, gave my employees and a platform for everybody to want. So we had a bunch of pens, marker, Post-it notes so people could leave a mark. Remember Kobe, the good moments, the bad moments, what Kobe meant to them.
Mural artist J.C. Rowe says he felt bittersweet as his creation 4 years ago is now more meaningful and important to the community with the basketball legend's passing.
I think it's something special and something unique about the paper being fragile and that the messages on each note is so meaningful. Like, I feel like maybe we all found out that life is both fragile and meaningful.
Kobe Bryant and his daughter were buried February 7th in a private ceremony near the family's Southern California home.
Thanks, Jim. That's my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson. And I encourage our Voice of America listeners to check out Jim's weekly Game Room podcast, which you can hear via voanews.com. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Listen to VOA's program lineup, live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
VOA! I encourage our VOA listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOASunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOASunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America.
Our Voice of America listeners can also follow me on Twitter. My handle is @VOASunnySports. In pro basketball, Wednesday was a bad day for Cameroonian star Joel Embiid of the Philadelphia 76ers. Embiid sprained his left shoulder in a 108-94 loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers and left the game in the first quarter. Earlier Wednesday, the NBA fined Embiid $25,000 for making an obscene gesture on the court during a win Monday over the Atlanta Hawks, as well as using profanity in a live television interview. Elsewhere around the NBA, the Houston Rockets routed the Memphis Grizzlies 140-112. Russell Westbrook and James Harden combined for 63 points. Harden, the NBA's leading scorer, piled up 30 points without even playing in the fourth quarter. And that wraps up the February 27th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to my producer, Mukbil Yabaro. Thanks also to Voice of America engineer Patrick Dea. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
This is Science in a Minute.
It's been a little over 15 months since NASA's InSight lander touched down on Mars. The space agency reports that six new published papers detail some of the findings made by InSight both above and deep below the red planet's surface. Scientists found that Mars trembles much more than expected, with 174 seismic events or Mars quakes over a period of 235 Martian days or 241 and a half Earth days. Mars doesn't have the same tectonic activity that causes quakes here on Earth, so scientists suggest volcanic activity are causing the Mars quakes. While the red planet lost its magnetic field billions of years ago, InSight provided information that when it did exist, it magnetized rocks located between 61 meters and several kilometers underground. The scientists are still waiting for data from InSight that can determine whether Mars has a solid or liquid core. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues.
It's about listening to them
and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.